Well, thank you. Well, I'd like to begin our considerations by turning to the New Testament portion of our daily readings for the day in Luke chapter 17, where we read about the days of Lot and what happened to Lot's wife. In verse 28 of Luke chapter 17, it says, "Likewise also, as it was in the days of Lot, they did eat, they drank, they bought, they sold, they planted, they builded. But the same day that Lot went out of Sodom, it rained fire and brimstone from heaven and destroyed them all." And then we read in verse 32 the exhortation to remember Lot's wife. And so what I thought we could do today is to look at the circumstances of Lot and Sodom, verse 29, and Lot's wife, which we come to consider later on in our remarks. So I'd like to begin our study then by turning to Genesis chapter 12. Genesis chapter 12 is a passage well known to us because it's where God called Abraham to leave his family and his house behind in Ur of the Chaldees. And we read in verse 1 of Genesis 12, "Now Yahweh had said unto Abraham, Get thee out of thy country and from thy kindred and from thy father's house unto a land that I will show thee. And I will make of thee a great nation, I will bless thee and make thy name great, I shall be a blessing. And will bless them that bless thee, and curse him that curseth thee." Pardon me. "And in thee all families of the earth be blessed." And then it says in verse 4, "So Abram departed as Yahweh had spoken unto him, and Lot went with him. And Abram was 75 years old, and he departed out of Haran." So what we find here then is that when Abram was told to get out from his kindred and from his father's house and so on, he only did that partially because he took Lot with him. And if we go over to chapter 13 of Genesis, we have the occasion where Lot and Abram were dwelling together. But we read in verse 6 of Genesis 13, "The land was not able to bear them that they might dwell together, for their substance was great that they could not dwell together. And there was a strife between the herdmen of Abram's cattle and the herdmen of Lot's cattle." And so this is a very sad turn of events, that there was a separation made between Abram and Lot, not because of any wrongdoing or spiritual principles being compromised, but purely because their substance was great so that they could not dwell together. It's the substance of the things of this world that can hinder the relationships between brothers and sisters. And that's what happened with Abraham. Anyway, when we look at the record concerning Lot, we see a progression. We know how it was that Abraham said to Lot, "The whole land's before us, you take your portion, I'll go in the opposite direction, and I'll take my portion." And then we read in verse 10 that Lot lifted up his eyes, and behold, all the plain of Jordan, as it was well watered everywhere, before Yahweh destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah, even as the garden of Yahweh, like the land of Egypt, as I come to Zoar. And Lot chose him all the plain of Jordan, and Lot journeyed east, and they separated themselves the one from the other. So they're separated from each other. Notice the progression, though, as we say. Lot saw, first of all, in verse 10, then he chose to go there in verse 11. Then in verse 12, he dwelt in the cities of the plain and pitched his tent towards Sodom. Then chapter 14 and verse 12, they took Lot, Abraham's brother's son, who dwelt in Sodom and his goods and departed. So it's this progression. First of all, he saw, then he was inclined to go there, and then when he went there, he was inclined to go in there, and then he had a house. And chapter 19 and verse 2 tells us that he dwelt in a house. Now that's very significant when you compare Lot with Abraham. Because if you go over to Hebrews chapter 11, we're told about a particular aspect of Abraham's life, which demonstrated his faith. Now, this is interesting, because if you are called upon to state what examples in Abraham's life demonstrated his faith, we'd probably think about, particularly when he offered up Isaac his son, and the way that he came out of Ur of the Chaldees, and that sort of thing. But what about this in verse 9 of Hebrews 11? By faith he sojourned in the land of promise as in a strange country, dwelling in tabernacles with Isaac and Jacob, the heirs with him of the same promise. For he looked for a city which has foundations, whose builder and maker is God. And this contrasts with Lot, because Lot went down into Sodom to dwell in a city and he dwelt in a house. Balaam didn't do that. He looked for a city that has foundations. He lived out the spirit of a wandering nomad, as it were, a pilgrim, looking for the kingdom to come. And that's where his heart was. And he had no regard for the things of this life. He had no regard for the apparent prosperity of the Sodomites. He dwelt in tents as a token of the faith that he had. And so it is that we read in verse 13, "These all died in faith, not having received the promises, but having seen them afar off, and were persuaded of them, embraced them, and confessed that they were strangers and pilgrims on the earth." And this is the spirit of Abraham. It says that he saw the promises afar off. Do you notice this? In Genesis chapter 13, I don't think I mentioned it, Genesis chapter 13, Lot in verse 10, it says, "Lot lifted up his eyes and he beheld the apparent prosperity of the wickedness of the city of Sodom and Gomorrah." And then we read in verse 14, "And Yahweh said unto Abraham," after that Lot was separated from him, so it's after that point now he has separated himself from his kindred, he says, "Lift up now thine eyes," he says, "and look from the place where thou art, northward and southward and eastward and westward, for all the land which thou seest, to thee will I give it." So Lot chose the east, Sodom, but then Yahweh said to Abraham, "Actually, you're not going to have just a small part of the land like Lot. You're going to have all of the land. All of the land which thou seest, to thee will I give it, and to thy seed afterwards." And so we see this, the spirit of Abraham confessing that he was a stranger and pilgrim upon the earth, seeing the promises afar off, as it were, the fulfillment of the promise that the land would be given to him. And then we read in verse 17 of Genesis 13, "Arise, walk through the land in the length of it and in the breadth of it, for I will give it unto thee." And that's what Abraham did for the rest of his life, wandering around, as it were, walking around in the land that had been promised to him as a possession, which he had never yet received. And so we've got this contrast then between Lot, who lifted up his eyes and saw the apparent prosperity of the wicked to be desired. Abram lifted up his eyes and he walked after in obedience to the commandments of God. And of course that comes to our position as well. If you just go to Romans in chapter 4. Romans chapter 4, we read of this aspect of the faithfulness of Abraham and the way that he walked through the land. Romans 4 and verse 12, it talks about the righteousness but being imputed to Gentiles as well. For he was the father of circumcision to them which are not of the circumcision only, but notice these words, who walk in the steps of that faith of our father Abraham, which he had been yet uncircumcised. And so we walk in the steps of Abraham's faith, walking throughout the land, as it were, trusting that it would be given to us as an inheritance at the appointed time. Well, we could say much more about Abraham, and no doubt we have done and will do in the future, but we only want to move on now. We see Lot and Abraham. You turn back to Genesis chapter 19 that we read together. Genesis chapter 19 and verse 1. It says, "There came two angels to Sodom at even, and Lot sat in the gate of Sodom. And Lot, seeing them, rose up to meet them, and he bowed himself with his face toward the ground." So now this is a further progression in the life of Lot in relation to Sodom. He now sat in the gate. And in verse 9 it suggests that he had become a judge, as it were. They said, "Stand back." And they said again, "This one fellow came into Sodom and now he'll be a judge." So he was in the gate, a place of judgment, as it were, the elders of the city sat. And he was a judge. Well, they considered him to be setting himself up as a judge in the events that are described in this chapter. But if you go over to 2 Peter chapter 2, in 2 Peter chapter 2, we have a divine commentary on this. It's interesting to notice that the word Lot literally means veiled. He was a man who had a veil on, as it were. He couldn't see the spiritual principles that Abraham did, and that's why he went to live in a house in a city rather than live a stranger and a sojourner in the wilderness like Abraham did. But despite his lack of spiritual vision, Lot was a very principled and moral man. Look at the description that's used in 2 Peter chapter 2. It says here, it speaks of God in verse 6, turning the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah into ashes, condemn them with an overthrow, making them an example unto those that after should live ungodly, and delivered just Lot, vexed with the filthy conversation of the wicked, for that righteous man dwelling among them and seeing and hearing, vexed his righteous soul from day to day with the unlawful deeds. The Lord knoweth how to deliver the godly out of temptation. So notice his description of him. He's just Lot. He's the righteous man. His righteous soul. He's the godly, been delivered out of trials. And so it is that, in our situation, we live in a day where the judgments of God are about to be poured out upon the earth. And we are, whether we like it or not, dwelling amongst the unenlightened around us. And we see the terrible things that go on in the world around us. We see the terrible things that go on ostensibly in the name of the Lord Jesus Christ. And we need to think, well, how does that affect us? Well, Lot was vexed, it says. He vexed his righteous soul from day to day with unlawful deeds. And so whilst he went into Sodom, and he made a mistake by doing that, when he was there, he was righteous in terms of upholding the righteousness of God in the place of idolatry and wickedness. And so he had good motives, as it were, when he sat in the gate. He's trying to make a difference for good. He was vexed day to day by the unlawful deeds that they presented to him at the gate of the city. Well, turning back over to Genesis chapter 18 then. Genesis chapter 18, we have a most interesting dialogue between Abraham and the angel. It's just interesting to consider this. We're not going to look in any detail. We're not going to look at the aspect of Sarah becoming with child. We're not going to look at that. I just want to note a couple of points. The record is well known to us, and so we read in verse 16. The men rose up from thence and looked towards Sodom, and Abraham went with them to bring them on the way. And Yahweh said, shall I hide from Abraham that which I do, seeing that Abraham shall be surely a great and mighty nation, all the nations of the earth shall be blessed in him? For I know him that he will command his children and his household after him, and they shall keep the way of Yahweh to do justice and judgment. So this is something that, because Abraham was going to bring his family up in the way of righteousness, therefore the angel would speak to him and tell him what he's going to do. Verse 20. And Yahweh said, this is the angel, of course, speaking here, as we can show in verse 13. And Yahweh said, because the cry of Sodom and Gomorrah is great, and because their city is very grievous, I will now go down and see whether they have done altogether according to the cry of it, which has come unto me, and if not, I will know. And the men turned their faces from thence and went towards Sodom, but Abraham stood yet before Yahweh. So we find then that this angel says that he's going down to see whether the cry of Sodom and Gomorrah, whether their sin really is grievous or not. That's interesting, because obviously the Almighty God in heaven knows everything. It's not that he had to go there to find out. It's not that he had to go there, otherwise he wouldn't know. I think there's emphasis here. He's going to go down, the angel's going to go down, it says, and see whether they've done altogether according to what the report had been. And there's this emphasis in seeing when you consider Lot, particularly Lot. We have reference in the New Testament, in the Epistle of John, to the lust of the eyes, the lust of the flesh, and the pride of life. And Lot initially had this, the lust of the eyes. He saw. Then Abraham, by contrast, saw the promises afar off. The angel is going to come now to see the iniquity of the city. It's all about what we see, what we things that we do. And the angel, therefore, is going to go down and see whether or not the city is ripe for destruction, which, of course, it was. There's lots of interesting things in this chapter which we can't really touch upon. Just a few comments on this dialogue between Abraham and the angel in verse 23. Abraham drew near and said, "Wilt thou also destroy the righteous or the wicked?" Now, we just read in Peter that God knows how to deliver the wicked out of temptations, the righteous out of temptations. There was no question God would not destroy the righteous with the wicked. But this is what Abraham said. "Wilt thou destroy the righteous or the wicked? Peradventure there be 50 righteous within the city. Wilt thou also destroy and not spare the place for the 50 righteous that are therein?" And we know the account how he's negotiating with the Lord. Because God says in verse 26, Yahweh said, "If I find in Sodom 50 righteous in the city, I'll spare all this place for their sakes." And then Abraham says, "Well, what is this 5 lacking? We destroy it for 45 in verse 28. And he said, "No, I won't destroy it for 45. Then he goes on to 40 in verse 29. Then he goes on to 30 in verse 30. Verse 31, he says, he goes down to 20. And he said, "I will not destroy it for 20's sake." And he said in verse 32, "Oh, let not the Lord be angry, and I will speak yet but this once. Peradventure 10 shall be found there." And he said, "I will not destroy it for 10's sake." And Yahweh went his way as soon as he left communing with Abraham, and Abraham returned unto his place. And so the promise was that if there were 10 individuals within that city worthy of being saved, the city wouldn't be destroyed. And we ask the question, well, what's the significance of 10? Why 10? Why didn't Abraham go down to 5? Why particularly 10? When you look at the record in Genesis, we see that it would appear Lot's family numbered 10. There were 10 of them, it seems that way. Just to briefly go through them, you've got Lot himself, then Lot's wife, that's 2. Then he had 2 virgin daughters, at least, 2 virgin daughters, 2 married daughters, and 2 sons-in-law, at least 2 sons-in-law, and 2 sons. And if you add all that up, you get 10. So I think Abraham was thinking about Lot's family and saying, well, you know, if Lot's family had been faithful there, the city could be spared. He went down to 10, the number of Lot's family. And so that's just an interesting feature. But, of course, we know that there weren't 10 there. Lot tried to tell his family about what was going on, the judgment's about to take place. Verse 14, Lot went out and spake unto his sons-in-law, which married his daughters, and said, "Up, get you out of this place, for Yahweh will destroy the city." But he seemed as one that mocked unto his sons-in-law. They didn't take him seriously. They didn't take him seriously. And of course, that's a position that we find ourselves in. We tell people about the coming of the Lord Jesus Christ, and they don't take it seriously. They don't think, well, we need to look at this a bit further. They don't do that. They don't get seriously at all. Just like the sons-in-law of Lot. Well, if we go over to Isaiah chapter 1, we read here of Israel in connection with Sodom in this very context. I'm not entirely certain what to make of it, Isaiah chapter 1, but I can offer a few suggestions. Isaiah chapter 1 and verse 9, says that except Yahweh of hosts had left unto us a very small remnant, we should have been as Sodom, and we should have been like unto Gomorrah. And so it says that you got this. If in Jerusalem there would be a remnant, then they would be spared. Except there's that small remnant, we should have been as Sodom, we should have been like unto Gomorrah. Sodom and Gomorrah are totally destroyed. They're totally obliterated under the judgments of God, a total destruction. But Israel were not going to be like that. They weren't going to be totally destroyed and totally obliterated because of the purpose of God with them. And because there was a very small remnant, as it were, a very small remnant. And we go over to Jeremiah chapter 5. Jeremiah chapter 5. We read there again the same sort of idea in verse 1. Run ye to and fro through the streets of Jerusalem, and see now, and know, and seek in the broad places thereof. If ye can find a man, if there be any that executeth judgment, that seeketh the truth, and I will pardon it. So if there were any that in the city that sought the truth, it would be pardoned. And of course, we know that didn't take place. There weren't those who sought the truth. The city was wholly given over to idolatry, and so they weren't pardoned. They had to suffer the judgments of God. They had to be destroyed. But they weren't totally obliterated like Sodom was. You know, there's nobody in the earth today who you can look at as being Sodomites, apart from those who practice the deeds of Sodom. You know, there aren't any race of men from Sodom anymore. It's a place totally obliterated. That wouldn't happen to Israel, because there's still a small remnant, it says, a tiny remnant. And so they would be saved. And Isaiah chapter 3, just go back to Isaiah. Isaiah chapter 3. Again, we have this same idea in verse 9. Pardon me. Isaiah 3 and verse 9 talks about the fall of Jerusalem in verse 8. Chapter 3 verse 8. Jerusalem is ruined and Judah is fallen because their doing and their tongues are against Yahweh, to provoke the eyes of his glory. The show of their countenance does witness against them, and they declare their sin as Sodom. They hide it not. Woe unto their soul, for they have rewarded evil unto themselves. So the people had apostatized themselves in word and deed, in tongues and doings, in verse 8. And their sin was open, like Sodom's sin was open. It wasn't hidden at all. And because their sins were open, they're going to be judged by God. Just turn over to 1 Timothy chapter 5. Just as an aside, as it were. 1 Timothy chapter 5. We read of our position, really. 1 Timothy chapter 5 and verse 24. Some men's sins are open beforehand, going before to judgment, and some men they follow after. Likewise also the good works of some are manifest beforehand, and they that are otherwise cannot be hid. So there are some men's sins that, when they go to appear before the Lord Jesus Christ for judgment, their sins are open, and that they're just open and there for everybody to see. But then there are other things that perhaps people do in secret without anybody else knowing. They won't be hid. They'll be exposed as well under the scrutiny of the divine judge, who shall not judge after the hearing of his ears or seeing of his eyes, but righteous judgment. And so as an aside, a principle for ourselves, that we might not have open sins that Sodom did, but we still have sins, and we need to make sure that we're not hiding them, but rather we're confessing them and forsaking them as they come to our attention. Well, when we think of the sin of Sodom, then we automatically perhaps think of the practice of sodomy, homosexuality, that was prevalent in that city, and that's probably a fair assessment. The Epistle of Jude in verse 7, it says there, Jude in verse 7, even as Sodom and Gomorrah and the cities about them in like manner, giving themselves over to fornication and going after strange flesh, are set forth for an example, suffering the vengeance of eternal fire. And so Sodom and Gomorrah then were fornicators going after strange flesh, and we know what that means, and we don't need to elaborate on that aspect too much in our present considerations. But if you go to Ezekiel chapter 16, in Ezekiel chapter 16, we have another list here of the sins of Sodom. Pardon me. Ezekiel chapter 16 and verse 49. Behold, this was the iniquity of thy sister Sodom. Then he goes on to list the iniquities of Sodom. Pride, fullness of bread, abundance of idleness was in her and in her daughters. Neither did she strengthen the hands of the poor and needy, and they were haughty and committed abomination before me. Therefore I took them away as I saw good. Now this point is made sometimes by those who try to justify the practice of sodomy, and they say that here the sin of Sodom wasn't to do with fornication at all, it was because of these other issues. But actually it's not the case. It's interesting to notice that it's mentioned last, but it's still mentioned there in verse 50. They committed abomination before me. That was this, what we call sodomy. And more fornication in Jude, where they went after strange flesh, as it were. And we, of course, we know what that means. But it is interesting to look at this list in verse 49. Pride, fullness of bread, abundance of idleness. That's something that is interesting. Something that very closely matches the world in which we live. There's particularly in the European system. Fullness of bread. There's a plentiful food in the European system anyway. Not in some parts of the world, I know that. But in our personal circumstances here, we have that spirit. Abundance of idleness was in her and in her daughters. So she Sodom is a mother, and she's got daughters. We'll look at that in just a moment. But it says abundance of idleness was in her. Now there's no excuse for the followers of Christ to be idle, because there's much work that needs to be done in the Master's service. And we're told in Hebrews chapter 11, we won't look it up, but he that cometh to God must believe that he is, and that he is a rewarder of them that diligently seek him. So there's no excuse for being idle. We need to diligently seek God. If we don't use that diligence and live our life in a passive sort of a way, then we won't please God, because we're told that's a condition of pleasing God. And so then, we just go back over to 2 Peter chapter 2. 2 Peter chapter 2. We made the point here that Sodom and Gomorrah is going to be an example. In verse 6, turning the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah into ashes, condemn them with an overthrow, making them an example unto those that should live godly. Now the Lord would not destroy the righteous with the wicked, as Abraham recognized that. So when the judgments of God are going to come upon a particular place, the righteous are delivered out of it. And that's what comes out here in verse 9. The Lord knoweth how to deliver the godly out of temptations or trials, and to reserve the unjust unto the day of judgment to be punished. And the way in which that took place in Sodom was that Lot and his family were taken out of it, at least a few of his family, those who did listen. And then we find that very soon afterwards his daughters apostatized as well and committed abomination with their father, as we just read. But the point is that the way in which the Lord delivers the godly out of trials is to bring them out of the situation. The city is about to be destroyed, so he brought them out of the city, so it wouldn't be partakers of their iniquity, as it says in Genesis. But if you go over to Revelation chapter 17, we made the point earlier that it talks about Sodom and her daughters. In Revelation chapter 17, we have another woman of iniquity. which we know to be the Catholic system, the Roman religious system. Revelation chapter 17 and verse 5. Upon her forehead is a name written, Mystery, Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots and abominations of the earth. So you've got this city then, the mystery, Babylon the Great, this great city. And if you go to verse 8 of chapter 11, still talking about the same city, Revelation chapter 7 and 11, rather, and verse 8. We're not going to look at the context here, but we know we have looked at it in our Bible classes past times. Verse 8, it says, The dead body shall lie in the street of the great city, which spiritually is called Sodom and Egypt, where also our Lord was crucified. Sodom and Egypt, a city and a nation. And we think of the nation state of Rome as a Vatican city, and it's a nation and a city. But here, that city is spiritually called Sodom. And there will be no relaxing of the judgments of God against that place. It will be overthrown, just as in Sodom in times gone by were. So Revelation chapter 18, it says there in verse 1, he cried mightily with a strong voice, saying, Babylon the Great is fallen. Verse 3, all nations are drunk of the wine of the wrath of the fornication. And then we come out with verse 4. I heard another voice from heaven saying, Come out of him, my people. Now I think in the context of this chapter, I think that this appeal has been made to Israel. Israel, who are called upon to leave the system which the system that's about to be destroyed, and the work of Elijah to bring them through the wilderness of the peoples and so on. So we have this aspect of her sins are reached unto heaven, and God has remembered her iniquities. And then in verse 8, therefore her plagues will come in one day, death and so on. But here's the point, that the way in which the godly are delivered is because of the separation from the city that's being judged. And that's a spiritual position that we need to consider. And we'll look at that in just a moment. But if we just go back over to our New Testament reading in Luke chapter 17. In Luke chapter 17, we've seen and established, therefore, a bit of background to the words that are used here in Luke 17, verse 28. Likewise also, as it was in the days of Lot, they did eat, they drank, they bought, they sold, they planted, they builded. In other words, they got on with their everyday life. And when Lot tried to teach them and tell them that the city was going to be judged, they just didn't take it seriously. They behaved as if he was just having a laugh with them, as it were, and mocking with them. So it says in verse 29, But the same day that Lot went out of Sodom, it rained fire and brimstone of heaven and destroyed them all. But then we have Lot's wife. That's interesting, because Lot's wife is spoken of immediately after an exhortation not to go back when the day of judgment comes. In verse 30, it says, Even thus shall it be in the day when the Son of Man is revealed. In that day, he which shall be upon the housetop and his stuff in the house, let him not come down to take it away. And he that is in the field, let him likewise not return back. Remember Lot's wife. So Lot's wife is used then as an example to remember that we might not turn back. And I think that might be what Lot's wife actually did. Pardon me. If you just go over to Genesis chapter 29 again. Genesis chapter 29. Sorry, 19 rather. Genesis 19. And verse 26. They were told not to look back. In verse 26. can't find a reference now, actually. They were told not to look back anyway. And in verse 26, it says, his wife looked back from behind him, and she became a pillar of salt. And that was Lot's wife. We're told to remember Lot's wife. I think the suggestion is that when she looked back, it wasn't simply a passing glance as she's moving on to better things. The Lord gives her as an example that we might not turn back. And I think that the looking back here was a looking with intent, a looking with sorrow and sadness that the whole city was going to be destroyed. And she left behind all the things of that city. And she looked back with longing, as it were, for the things that she was leaving behind. And so Hebrews chapter 10 is instructive in this regard. In relation to our own position, Hebrews chapter 10 and verse 38. Verse 37 for context. For yet a little while, and he that shall come will come and not tarry. Quotation from Isaiah 46 verse 13. Now the just shall live by faith, but if any man draw back, my soul shall have no pleasure in him. But we are not of them that draw back unto perdition, but of them that believe to the saving of the soul. So notice the context here then. The just will live by faith. Just Lot vexed his righteous soul. He lived by faith, because he has a faith that he be saved as the angels brought them out. But if any man draw back, my soul has no pleasure in him. And that seems to be what Lot's wife did. She looked back. She never really left Sodom in her heart. And she looked back. And of course, we know how it is that, when the Lord Jesus Christ returns, we'll be in a similar situation to Lot's family in Sodom. Because the angel will come for us to lead us out, as it were, of this city of destruction, a city that's going to suffer the judgments of God. And so we need to prepare for that day to come and be ready just to leave everything behind. That's the spirit of Abraham. The two things that come out in this record concerning Abraham, Lot and Sodom. The first we looked at in the context of Abraham in Genesis 12, he came out from his kindred of Ur the Chaldees. Lot's wife was an example of those that do not turn back. And in 2 Corinthians 6, you just go there, 2 Corinthians 6, we're told to come out from among them. And you've got this aspect then of separating ourselves from the uncleanness of that which is going to be judged by God. And then you also have the principle of seeing, as it were. Lot lifted up his eyes, we noted. Abram lifted up his eyes, we noted. And the angel went down to see the sin of Sodom. It's all about the spiritual sight, seeing a city that hath foundations, as it were. And in 2 Corinthians chapter 6, we read in verse 14, be not unequally yoked together with unbelievers. What fellowship has righteousness with unrighteousness? And what communion has light with darkness? And in verse 17, this is instruction for our position. Wherefore, come out from among them, and be ye separate, saith the Lord. And touch not the unclean thing, and I will receive you, and will be a father unto you, and ye shall be my sons and daughters, saith the Lord Almighty. And so, rather than become like Lot settling into Sodom, we need to be like Abraham, showing that spirit of being a stranger, a sojourner in the world. And we need to look at the example of Lot's wife, who turned back, it would appear. She looked back behind him and was consumed in the iniquity of that city. And so I think I'll bring our considerations to a close at that point. And I hope we've given some background, as it were, to the words in Luke chapter 17.